WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley. Today we celebrate Mardi Gras with a New Orleans institution, clarinetist and vocalist Doreen Ketchens. She's been nicknamed Lady Louie, Queen Clarinet, and Miss Satchmo because of her ability to hit long, high notes like jazz great Louis Armstrong. For nearly four decades, Ketchens has performed on the corner of Royal and St. Peter Street in the French Quarter with her band, Doreen's Jazz New Orleans. She's also performed in concert halls like the Kennedy Center, at musical festivals around the world, and in front of four U.S. presidents. Doreen Ketchens talks about being trained as a classical clarinetist in high school and learning from greats like Ellis Marsalis. We also talk about the influence and loss of her husband and music collaborator Lawrence Ketchens, who died in January, and what it was like to play in his second line. First News. This is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley. And if you're ever in the French Quarter in New Orleans, chances are you've spotted my guest today, clarinetist and vocalist Doreen Ketchens. For over 30 years, she's performed on the corner of Royal and St. Peter Street, 4 days a week, sometimes 12 hours a day, with her band, Doreen's Jazz New Orleans. Doreen Ketchens has many nicknames, Lady Louie, Queen Clarinet, and Miss Satchmo, nods to her passionate performances of Dixieland and traditional jazz, and for her ability to hit and hold high notes for long periods of time, like the great trumpeter Louis Armstrong. Ketchens has performed for four U.S. presidents, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and Jimmy Carter. And initially, she played classical clarinet before her late husband, Lawrence Ketchens, introduced her to jazz while the two were students at Loyola University. Lawrence was an accomplished musician in his own right, too. As part of Doreen's band, he played the tuba, valve trombone, drums, and piano, becoming a major attraction for his ability to play the sousaphone and drums at the same time. A few years ago, Ketchens fulfilled her dream of performing at the Kennedy Center. She's also played with orchestras around the world. Doreen Ketchens, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
I want to offer my sincerest condolences on the loss of your husband, Lawrence, who just died this past January. And I had the pleasure of going down the rabbit hole of watching your performances. And aside from being utterly captivated, I was also just taken by what felt like magic watching the two of you performing together. Are you still performing?
Yep. I mean, I don't want to get haunted for the rest of my life, you know. And that's what he'd do. He used to always tell me, you know, you got to play no matter what. So that's what I'm doing. And it's working. It's working. I get strength from just thinking about the times he's been in the audience, you know, and giving me a nod, you know, one way or the other.
It seemed like there was such a great love between the two of you, and your love language was the music. You all performed together for many decades, and I think maybe a beautiful way to start our conversation is to actually hear a little bit of the two of you. I watched this video of you two performing for the New Orleans jazz station, WWOZ, and there you are playing the clarinet and singing, and Lawrence was playing sousaphone and the drums at the same time. I don't actually think I've ever seen that in my life. I was thinking how. Can I play a little bit of that performance?
Yes, please.
The song is House of the Rising Sun.
There is a house beneath our holies. They call the risings is then the run of a many young lives. And now I know who I won. My mother, she won.
That was my guest today, Doreen Ketchins and her late husband Lawrence playing House of the Rising Sun. Doreen, what a remarkable performance. I mean, as I mentioned, Lawrence is playing the drums and blowing into that sousaphone, which is a type of tuba, at the same time. How did he figure out that he had that talent?
We had drummer problems. And the drummer didn't show up, and he was tired of it, you know, and we were on the street. He said he wasn't that good anyway. I bet you I could play just as good as him. And played a tuba. And so he sat behind the drums and he took one stick in his left hand and he just started to do it. I mean, just like that. And it was there. He can't play rolls and stuff like that. So he does the inflections, you know what I mean? So if you're just listening to the drummer, you know, there's a lot of space in there. But if you're listening to the group, then he fills in all of these spaces that you would normally hear the drummer do. It's just amazing, you know. But necessity is the mother of invention, and he invented the tuba drummer.
One thing I notice is that you've got a growl that, you know, it's not only present in your singing voice, but we also heard it while you were playing the clarinet. How do you do that? Like, you make your clarinet growl.
People have asked me about that growl a lot. So I did I did some videos on it on YouTube during the pandemic when I was going absolutely crazy because I couldn't go out and play. But there are two ways of doing a growl. There's one with the throat, you know, like that, like you're gargling. And there's another one with the tongue, like a Spanish R, you know. And both of them basically sound the same when I do them. But you pick one. You know, and I picked the Spanish R because I thought the transition to and from was smoother. Mm. So, and that's how I do it. I just, that's how I do it. That's it.
How did you two start playing on the streets of the French Quarter?
Well, we were away in Connecticut. We met at Loyola, and we had really good scholarships. But the, you know, when you get to be a junior, you know, well, tuition continuously goes up. Whereas your scholarship stays the same. So in my junior year, you know, well, our junior year, we asked for more money. And, you know, universities, they don't really invest in, you know, student juniors that are already there, you know. And it hurt my feelings. So I started applying to different places and got accepted into a few. But the University of Hartford, the Hart School of Music, you know, had the most money. And I didn't realize the cost of living in Hartford was a whole lot more. But it still worked out okay. And I went there, and I stayed on campus for the first semester. Didn't like it. So I found me a nice apartment off campus for the following semester. And I stayed there, and it was good until they stole my car. They stole my, I stopped in to take a nap. And when I came out, there was nothing there. My car was gone. My clarinet was in my car because I was, clarinets were in my car because I was taking a nap. You know, I thought I'd just hop on back. But anyway, they eventually found my car. And the only reason, they took everything out of there except the clarinet because the latch on the case came loose. And there were two clarinets in there. And so when they picked it up, all of the pieces just, you know, sprawled all over the trunk. And so they didn't bother, you know, picking them up or nothing. And so my clarinets were intact, and which was cool because, you know, that was the biggest thing that was in the car.
Right.
But once they stole my car, and Lawrence was still here, he was going to Xavier at the time, and he said, man, she can't be out there by herself. She's too far and she's alone. I got to go. And while we were there, he got us some work with this company called Landerman Agency. And they threw parties, you know, corporate events and stuff like that. And, you know, it was nice that they had this exclusive New Orleans band. And so, you know, we worked that way. And that's how I started practicing, basically, you know, just playing the music. I just played melodies in the beginning. But after a while, you know, I started, you know, improvising just a tiny bit. And so we're in Connecticut and we're doing pretty good. And then Lawrence's father dies. And actually, his father was sick, and we went down and we got married there because, you know, he wanted his father to see him married. I mean, we were going to get married anyway, but we pushed it forward at that point. And then his father died. And a month and a day later, my father died. And, you know, well you don't know, but I'm the youngest of three, and he's the youngest of three. And he had two sisters, and I had two brothers. And we were caretakers, you know. I mean, we're the ones that took care of, you know, our parents and stuff like that. So we didn't want to be so far away. We wanted to try and be here for as long as we could with our mothers, you know, as they transitioned from having partners to not having any at all. And so we came down and we started doing whatever we could, you know, to make ends meet. And we were walking in the French Quarter one day. And we saw some people playing on the street, and Lawrence said, "Hey, look, we could do that." And I'm like, "Man, you must be crazy. I've been to college. I'm not playing on no street." You know? But love makes you do crazy things. And, you know, we went out there and we played, and I was okay because we were together, you know, and got a little following. You know, people liked us. We were young, cute, and all that stuff. And, you know, the music was pretty good.
Right.
Actually, yeah, it's approaching four. Yeah.
I love watching the videos of you and your band. And I was just thinking about that experience of seeing basically like a concert, these expert musicians in a accessible space when you're out on the street. But was it always so welcoming out there? I know it can be like notoriously competitive among musicians jockeying for space when you're a street musician.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but we, you know, sometimes we sleep on the spot. I mean, you do what you have to do, you know, and it was the two of us, so it was easier to fight. So, you know, it was kind of set up for victory, you know, as far as, you know, as long as we weren't lazy. And, you know, you had to deal with the people who, for some reason, they moved to the French Quarter and want quiet. I don't understand that at all. But they called the police.
Oh, you mean the people, you know, who live? Yeah, the people who live there.
Yeah, man. You know, they say, "Oh, I don't want to hear, I don't want to hear that music." And I'm like, "Bruh, you in the French Quarter." You know, what do you expect, you know? But, yeah, so, and then, you know, you got to deal with police who are having a bad day, you know, and stuff. So, yeah, it gets kind of challenging, but, you know, it's fun. And It was fun creating together. It was fun growing together. It was fun just making music and, you know, making people stop. I mean, because, you know, street chops are different. You know, you go out there and you set up and most people think, you know, you're on drugs or something's wrong with you. Mm. And so they pass by you or decide they're going to pass by you. But then you start playing and they stop. And, you know, you're on the street, you got to make people stop and listen, and then give you money, you know. We're extremely blessed because, you know, we always seem to find that combination that makes people say, "Oh my goodness," and they still do it, and it's grand.
Doreen, let's take a short break. And if you're joining us, my guest is clarinetist and vocalist Doreen Ketchens. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. This is Fresh Air, and today I'm talking with jazz clarinetist, vocalist, and New Orleans institution, Doreen Ketchens. She's known for her performances of Dixieland and traditional jazz, which has earned her the nicknames Lady Louie, Queen Clarinet, and the female Louis Armstrong for her exceptional range and powerful high notes. You know, to watch you perform, you really are. You're like putting your whole body into it. Your eyes are closed. And I mean, I guess that's not unusual. I mean, when you are like intensely focused on your instrument. I've heard you say when you're playing, you're constantly digging for more information within yourself. And I was like, wow, really taken by that. But also wonder more of what you mean.
I mean, just like with anything else, you know, if you're a parent, you want to be a better parent than your parent, even though you had a great parent, you know. But I just don't want to fall into a rut. People are growing up listening to what I'm doing, what I did, and, you know, I want to be above that. It's flattering in some senses. You know, it's insulting because people steal your licks and everything else and they don't acknowledge it, you know. But it's still, you know, you want to stay ahead of the game. You want to be the best. Louis Armstrong is like a big influence on me. And I have listened to, well, I thought up until the other day, actually, I thought I listened to everything that was out there by Louis Armstrong. But there's always something new, you know. But I can hear the same song over that I've heard for hundreds of times and find something new inside of it. It's amazing.
Is there a favorite Armstrong? I know that's like asking, is there a favorite child? But is there a favorite song of his that you love or you go back to often?
Yeah, that is like... asking about a child, you know, I mean, because there's some that strike me in certain ways and others that strike me in others, you know. I mean, when you say that, you know, La Vie en Rose comes to mind, and probably because my daughter hates it.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
She says.
Yeah. You know, but and then, you know, she fell in love and stuff like that, and she like understood it, and, you know, and stuff like that. But La Vie en Rose comes to mind because, you know, he had a way of doing things, you know, sort of like Nat King Cole. You know, you can hear Nat King Cole sing in French and Spanish. It ain't the best French and Spanish, you know, but it's great, you know, because he had that respect, you know, for it. And you can hear Louis do all kinds of different kinds of music, you know, and still know it's Louis. First note, you know, I mean. So I just aspire to just be great. And in order to be great, you got to keep aspiring to be great, you know. And
do you have your own take on that favorite, on your favorite Armstrong song? And if so, can you play a little bit of it? Not the whole thing, but just a bit.
Oh, La Vie en Rose? Well, I set myself up for that, didn't I? Let me see. When you speak, angels sing from above. Every day word seems to turn into love songs. Give your heart and soul to me, and life will always be. La Vie en Rose.
Thank you so much for that. I mean, you nicknamed all of these names, you know, Lady Louie for a reason. And that's very clear, some of the reasons why, but I'm very curious to know, when did you first discover yourself in Armstrong? Do you remember when you first heard that within his music yourself?
Yeah, I didn't realize it at all. I was just doing what I do. I was just learning songs and playing songs. And somebody asked me, you know, when I was singing, you know, they said, "How do you do that with those words?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And, you know, Louis spoke like my dad, you know. And so without realizing it, you know, instead of saying word, I say void, you know, stuff like that, you know, because that's what, you know, I grew up with. You change with society. You know, you go to college and you say, "Well, that void," and they're like, "What the heck are you talking about?" You know what I mean? So, but you know, it always comes back when I do that. And a lot of the melodies, you know, the way he interpreted the melodies and stuff, I really, really, really liked it. You know, and it appealed to me. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I start off like I learn the melody right from him. You know, I'll do exactly what he does. But as, you know, as I play it, as I develop, you know, with the song, it becomes me. You know, I change a few things, you know, because he played a trumpet and I play a clarinet, you know, and he was a much older man. I was a much younger woman, and just other things that come into play that you don't expect, but they do because it's human nature, you know. So, yeah, I didn't realize it. But once I realized it, I embraced it and just roll with it, you know, and I'm still rolling with it.
Our guest today is jazz clarinetist and vocalist Doreen Ketchens. We'll be right back after a short break. I'm Tanya Mosley, and this is Fresh Air.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from the station and from Uma, a cloud-based phone service for any size business with an automated virtual receptionist, video meetings, and other features to connect to customers and coworkers anywhere at uma.com/NPR. And from Workday, Workday is an AI platform for forward thinkers dedicated to transforming the way business leaders manage people and money today so they can transform tomorrow. Workday, moving business forever forward. This is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley. And my guest today is jazz clarinetist and cultural ambassador to New Orleans, Doreen Ketchens. Known for her performances of Dixieland and traditional jazz, Ketchens has earned the nicknames Lady Louie and Queen Clarinet for her exceptional range and powerful high notes. She's performed for four U.S. presidents and formed her own band, Doreen's Jazz New Orleans, in 1987. She's recorded 28 albums with her ensemble and is known as a fixture for her street performances in the French Quarter. In 2022, she received an honorary doctorate in music from Five Towns College. Doreen, you're a fixture in the French Quarter of New Orleans, but tell us a little bit more about the area that you grew up in.
I grew up in the Treme, and Yeah, a lot of people are familiar with that neighborhood because of the TV series. And I grew up in a house that I was christened in, actually. It used to be a church. It was a church. And I was christened in that very house. And then it became a whole bunch of other things. But, yep, right in the middle. And my parents had a sweet shop. And
named
they named
you.
It after me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother New Orleans traditional story in itself.
Like naming stores and things after each other, or?
Oh, no. I went to a nursery school called Marietta Bottery. And like any other institution, you know, people need to raise money. And so we have these innovative ways of raising money here in New Orleans. You know, I mean, you could sell things like World's Finest Chocolate, which everybody and their mama, you know, has at least tried once. And, you know, oranges, jams, and or other candies. But I wanted to be queen of my nursery school. And every year they would have a fundraiser, which would be a Mardi Gras ball. And that Mardi Gras ball, you get to dress up, you know, and walk down the aisle. And, you know, there's a king and his queen in their court. And, you know, I just thought it was the coolest little thing. I went there 2 years in a row. But so it came. And if she hadn't been there that morning when I woke up and he was gone, I would have been alone in that big old house, you know. I'd have still been all right. I'm still in labor there. And that's God.
Doreen, let's take a short break.